Hold on, let me read it.
Oh, wait. No, we didn't. We definitely didn't do 45, because look how short that is. There's no way we did that.
No, we didn't. I know we didn't.
All right. I'm going to start now at 45. The word that Jeremiah the prophet spake unto Baruch, the son of Neriah, when he had written these words in a book at the mouth of Jeremiah, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, Thus saith Yahweh, the God of Israel, unto thee, O Baruch. Thou didst say, Woe is me now, for Yahweh hath added grief to my sorrow. I fainted in my sighing, and I find no rest. Thus shalt thou say unto him, Yahweh saith thus, Behold, that which I have built will break down, and that which I have planted I will pluck up, even this whole land. And seekest thou great things for thyself? Seek them not, for behold, I will bring evil on all flesh, saith Yahweh. But thy life will I give unto thee for a prey in all places whither thou goest.
You know, sometimes when it says all flesh in these prophecies, I really believe that it means all of the flesh that have the Spirit of God. Because that's the context. I mean, this evil is being brought upon the people of Jerusalem or Judah. They're not. It's not being brought upon the Chinese or the people in India or whatever. That's upon monkeys and lions, and they're made of flesh. So often all flesh in scripture means all flesh that he's concerned with that has his spirit. Or in the context, all of the flesh of the children of Israel. Go on.
Well, it's like if you were living in Britain and the government announced all men are required to report for duty to sign up for the war or whatever, it doesn't mean all men in the world. It means all British men. But they say all men. You know, they don't say, because you're dealing with that nation.
Right.
So it's like we do the same thing.
It's context, but these asshole universalists want to think that all flesh can mean everybody on the planet. In at least some of the contexts.
Where it says, like, I will give unto thee for a prey. But thy life will I give unto thee for a prey. That means his life will be his booty. Like he will preserve his own life.
Yeah.
Could all flesh be translated as a whole body? The whole body?
The body of the children of Israel, yeah. Well, here, once again, we're also out of sequence with the other chapters because we've already had Zedekiah as king for a dozen chapters, and now all of a sudden it's Jehoiakim. So these chapters that we're about to read, several of them belong a lot earlier in Jeremiah. Then when you get to chapter 49, Zedekiah is the king again. But Zedekiah was the king in chapter 44, verse 30, just a couple of verses before this. Zedekiah, king of Judah.
User entered your channel.
So I don't know how the rabbis did it, but they really screwed up the order of these chapters.
User entered your channel.
I always envisioned a bunch of scrolls falling out on the ground and they put them back in the wrong order or something. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I heard they brought up a lot of the scrolls and just burned them, these kikes.
Well, that could be too.
Like during the medieval period, there were like a lot of different ancient manuscripts and the Jews just got a hold of them all and destroyed them, like what they're doing today.
Right. And I believe that also. Their excuse was they were trying to standardize the text back in the 6th in the 6th to the 10th centuries. They were trying to standardize the text. That's why Hebrew texts are so rare, and the oldest ones that we have are only from the 10th century. And I believe there's two of them in existence, but they're only from the 10th century. One of them is the Codex Leningradensis, but I don't remember the name of the other one. But there's one other that's thought to be just as old, and that's it. But when you read Josephus, he clearly had a variant Hebrew manuscript than what you see in the Masoretic text in several places.
The word of Yahweh, which came to Jeremiah, the prophet, against the heathen, against Egypt, against the army of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, which was by the river Euphrates in Carchemish, which is Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, smote in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah. Order ye the buckler and shield and draw near to battle. Harness the horses and get up, ye horsemen, and stand forth with your helmets, furbish the spears and put on the brigandines. Wherefore have I seen them dismayed and turned away back? And their mighty ones are beaten down and are fled apace and look not back, for fear was round about, saith Yahweh. Let not the swift flee away, nor the mighty man escape. They shall stumble and fall toward the north by the river Euphrates. Who is that that cometh up as a flood, whose waters are moved as the rivers? Egypt rises up like a flood, and his waters are moved like the rivers, and he saith, I will go up, and I will cover the earth. I will destroy the city and the inhabitants thereof. Come up, ye horses, and rage, ye chariots, and let the mighty men come forth, the Ethiopians and the Libyans that handle the shield, and the Lydians that handle and bend the bow. For this is the day of Yahweh, God of hosts, a day of vengeance, that he may avenge him of his adversaries, and the sword shall devour, and it shall be satiate and made drunk with their blood. For Yahweh, God of hosts, hath made sacrifice in the north country by the river Euphrates. Go up into Gilead and take balm, O virgin, the daughter of Egypt. In vain shalt thou use many medicines, for thou shalt not be cured. The nations have heard of thy shame, and thy cry hath filled the land, for the mighty man hath stumbled against the mighty, and they are fallen both together.
Herodotus, the historian, mentioned Pharaoh Necho on several occasions. Egypt evidently had some sort of revival with the time of Pharaoh Necho, but it was short-lived. Necho led troops to Carchemish to try to recapture it after Assyria fell, right? Assyria fell to the Scythians and Persians and Medes and Babylonians in... the popular date is 612 BC, I believe. And Josiah, the king of Judah, was killed in 608 BC because after Assyria fell, Pharaoh Necho went to Carchemish, which was the capital of the Hittites, to conquer it and claim it for Egypt because the Assyrian Empire had fallen apart. He saw an opportunity to do that. Josiah thought to prevent him and went out, and Josiah was killed in battle in 608 BC, trying to prevent Pharaoh Necho from crossing through Judah to get to the hit to Carchemish, which was to the north in Syria. So this Pharaoh Necho, of course, failed, and the Babylonians ended up killing him in battle.
User in your channel timed out.
But Herodotus wrote about Pharaoh Necho, and he also wrote about the death of Josiah, but he didn't call him Josiah. He only called him the king of the Syrians of Palestine. That's exactly what three or four times Herodotus calls the Judeans the Syrians of Palestine. So he thought they were no different than the Syrians, which is interesting.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, the thing about that, Josiah had that letter. I think we mentioned that a few Bible studies ago, from Necho saying, let me pass. I'm not interested in fighting with Judah. But I was wondering about what Josiah's reason was for not wanting him to pass. And I think, is it possible that Josiah had plans to take Carchemish himself?
Well, that could be because Israel had traditionally held land all the way to Hamath, right? In the time of David. But Hamath isn't really as far east as Carchemish, or as far west, I'm sorry. Carchemish, I believe, is a little further. And I wish Google Maps wouldn't publish shit in. Yeah, Carchemish is actually, it's almost straight north, the ancient site of Carchemish, then Hamath. So yeah, it may just well be at what Josiah saw as an opportunity to regain the lands on the coast of Syria, which the children of Israel had controlled from the time of David to the time of just before the time of Jeroboam II, those lands were lost to the Assyrians, and Jeroboam II had recovered them for some time from the Assyrians. Ahab was fighting with the Assyrians, and that's something we don't see in scripture. But there was a point in Assyrian inscriptions where Ahab, the king of Israel, the evil king, that he had actually sent 10,000 troops in a league with Damascus to fight against the Assyrians, as they were conquering Syria. So there's a lot of stuff going on there behind the scenes that we're just not told in scripture. It's peripheral stuff, but it's still important. Hamath isn't as far north as I remembered it. Measured distance. It's another 200 miles almost to Carchemish, which is really in modern Turkey, north of Syria.
All right. The word that Yahweh spake to Jeremiah the prophet, how Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, should come and smite the land of Egypt. Declare ye in Egypt, and publish in Migdol, and publish in Noph and in Taphenes. Say ye, stand fast, and prepare thee, for the sword shall devour round about thee. Why are thy valiant men swept away? They should not, because Yahweh did drive them.
Microphone muted.
He made many to fall, yeah. One fell upon another, and they said, arise, and let us go again to our own people and to the land of our nativity from the oppressing sword. They did cry there. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, is but a noise. He hath passed the time appointed. As I live, saith the king, whose name is Yahweh of hosts, surely as Tabor is among the mountains and as Carmel by the sea, so shall he come. O thou daughter dwelling in Egypt, furnish thyself to go into captivity, for Noph shall be waste and desolate without an inhabitant. Egypt is like a very fair heifer, but destruction cometh, it cometh out of the north. Also her hired men are in the midst of her, like fatted bullocks, for they also are turned back and are fled away together. They did not stand, because the day of their calamity was come upon them, and the time of their visitation. The voice thereof shall go like a serpent, for they shall march with an army and come against her with axes and hewers of wood. They shall cut down her forest, saith Yahweh, though it cannot be searched, because they are more than the grasshoppers and are innumerable. The daughter of Egypt shall be confounded. She shall be delivered into the hand of the people of the north. Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, saith, Behold, I will punish the multitude of No and Pharaoh and Egypt with their gods and their kings, even Pharaoh and all them that trust in him. And I will deliver them into the hand of those that seek their lives and into the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of his servants. And afterward it shall be inhabited as in the days of old, saith Yahweh. But fear not thou, O my servant Jacob, and be not dismayed, O Israel. For behold, I will save them from afar off, and thy seed from the land of their captivity. And Jacob shall return and be in rest and at ease, and none shall make him afraid. Fear thou not, O Jacob my servant, saith Yahweh, for I am with thee. For I will make a full end of all the nations whither I have driven thee, but I will not make a full end of thee, but correct thee in measure, yet I will not leave thee wholly unpunished. Someone's mic keeps turning on.
Might be mine, but I'll watch for it. I wasn't watching, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I'm trying to recall a passage, but I can't really. It's been a long time. But in the lyric poet of Sappho, in the lyric poetry of Sappho, who was a 6th century Greek lyric poet and a female, there's actually an allusion or a mention of mercenaries, Greek mercenaries fighting any employee of Babylonians against Jerusalem.
User in your channel, time
which
out.
Is pretty interesting. I always thought the world was, yeah, you know, a lot of people interpret the Bible and try to seal up Jerusalem or Israel in a vacuum, but you just can't interpret the Bible that way. There was a lot of intercourse with the surrounding User nations, including the Greeks. And that came to mind when you were talking about or when Jeremiah was talking about the mercenaries that were in the employ of the Egyptians. All the armies of the ancient world employed mercenaries. They all did.
Yeah, Bill, it's like they want us to believe that Egypt was white, Assyria was white, Persia's white, but then in the middle you have this Jewish nation which is like isolated from the rest of some bull, you know?
Well, that's just absolutely nuts, right?
Yeah, it is nuts. It's silly.
And all the armies of the world today employ mercenaries. It's just not really talked about that often.
Right. That's true. The American army offers citizenship to Mexicans and Latin Americans that'll fight, join the army and fight for 4 years or whatever, and they become citizens.
And the French Foreign Legion.
The British were always employing Hessians. They employed Hessians here in the American Revolution.
You mean, is that the niggers? Is that what I would say? Haitians? Is that it? Is that who they employed?
Hessians, Germans from Hesse.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Hesse in Germany is near the Rhineland. It's right next to the Rhineland.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all.
Hessians, Hessians, not Haitians. Wow. I mean, if Hitler complained about the French bringing Haitians into the Rhineland, but not the British didn't do that.
the Hessians were there in the Revolutionary War, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't remember if you mentioned that war or was there a different one where they're employed as well?
I'm sure they were probably employed in the War of 1812 and later wars too, but they were employed definitely in the Revolutionary War, yes.
Did some of them stay?
Yes, I believe so. I wouldn't doubt if most of them stayed. But I really can't know. But I do know that there were Hessian deserters that stayed.
You see out verse 25 how it says that Yahweh is going to punish the multitude of no with their gods and all who trust in Pharaoh. Well, in the last, I think it was in chapter 44, we were saying that Israel had committed idolatry by trusting in Pharaoh. And so here you have Yahweh punishing Pharaoh with his idolatrous gods and with all people who trusted in him.
And that was back when we did the Exodus, like a year or two ago, we discussed that in relation to the Exodus. And I think I discussed that in my Wisdom of Solomon commentary. And I didn't originate the concept, other people did. But it makes perfect sense that the plagues of the Exodus were all modeled on these gods that the Egyptians worshipped, which is basically what Solomon said, that they were punished with their own devices, and they were punished by those things that they worshipped.
Oh, I see.
They had a fly god, a dung beetle god, so Yahweh sent them a plague of flies. They had a frog god, and Yahweh sent them a plague of frogs, whatever.
Yeah, it's like if you want to worship frogs, now you've got to be destroyed. That's, yeah.
Yeah, so they were punished by those things that they worshipped.
You want frogs? Here's your frogs.
I remember a verse where Yahweh says, "Where are those gods you trusted in? Go to them and ask them to save you." So now the Egyptians are going to go to the frogs. Save us, save us.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it sounds pretty nuts, right? Wow, Jeremiah 47 is kind of short,
microphone
too.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, it's all... There's bits and pieces like all cut up all over the place, it seems.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've read Jeremiah through, but the you know, when you read Jeremiah through in the way the Bible is published, it's only in like one column out of two on a page, and chapters might seem longer than they are. Like you might have to turn a leaf to finish 47. Depending on where it is, so you may not notice it so short.
Yeah. The word of Yahweh.
48
sorry.
Is 47 verses. I'm sorry. 48 is like two chapters.
Yeah. So it's all.
Microphone muted.
I'll read it now. The word of Yahweh that came to Jeremiah the prophet against the Philistines before that Pharaoh smote Gaza. They, thus saith Yahweh, behold, waters rise up out of the north and shall be an overflowing flood and shall overflow the land and all that is therein, the city and them that dwell therein. Then the men shall cry and all the inhabitants of the land shall howl. At the noise of the stamping of the hooves of his strong horses, at the rushing of his chariots, and at the rumbling of his wheels, the fathers shall not look back to their children for feebleness of hands. Because of the day that cometh to spoil all the Philistines, and to cut off from Tyrus and Sidon every helper that remaineth. For Yahweh will spoil the Philistines, the remnant of the country of Kaphtor. Baldness is come upon Gaza. Ashkelon is cut off with the remnant of their valley. How long wilt thou cut thyself? O thou sword of Yahweh, how long will it be thou be quiet? But up, put up thyself into thy scabbard, rest and be still. How can it be quiet, seeing Yahweh hath given it charge against Ashkelon? And against the sea shore, there hath he appointed it. And so these men are bold because they're in mourning. Oh, Bill, your mic is muted.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of trying to say something. Verse 4 is pretty, it is pretty interesting to me. Because he wants to destroy the Philistines and Gaza in order to cut off from Tyre and Sidon every helper that remains. Meaning that he didn't want these other people, these Philistines, coming to the aid of the people of Tyre and Sidon.
User in your channel timed out.
Kind of shows me that the Tyrians, especially, that they're Israelites, they're not Canaanites. Because Yahweh wants to punish them. So why would he cut off every helper from the Canaanites? Makes no sense, right? It doesn't to me in that context. That overflow, the waters that rise up out of the north are the Babylonians, right? They're not literal waters. The overflowing flood is the size of the Babylonian armies that are coming to destroy the Philistines, Gaza, and Ashkelon.
And so that proves User that a flood can channel. Be a people, like in Revelation.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't speaking about literal water. Oh.
All right, well, I'll read 48 then.
Yeah, a chunk of the time, just in case we want to discuss any of it.
Yeah. Against Moab, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, woe unto Nebo, for it is spoiled. Kiriathaim is confounded and taken. Mizgab is confounded and dismayed. There shall be no more praise of Moab, and in Heshbon they have devised evil against it. Come, and let us cut it off from being a nation. Also thou shalt be cut down, O madman, the sword shall pursue thee. A voice of crying shall be from Horanaim, spoiling and great destruction. Moab is destroyed, her little ones have caused a cry to be heard. For in the going up of Luhith, continual weeping shall go up. For in the going down of Horanaim, the enemies have heard a cry of destruction. Flee, save your lives, and be like the heath in the wilderness. For because thou hast trusted in thy works and in thy treasures, thou shalt be also shall also be taken, and Chemosh shall go forth into captivity with his priest and his princes together. And the spoiler shall come upon every city, and no city shall escape. The valley shall also shall perish, and the plain shall be destroyed, as Yahweh hath spoken. Give wings unto Moab, that it may flee and get away, for the cities thereof shall be desolate, without any to dwell therein. Cursed be he that doeth the work of Yahweh deceitfully, and cursed be he that keepeth back his sword from blood. Moab hath been at ease from his youth, and he hath settled on his lees, and hath not been emptied from vessel to vessel, neither hath he gone into captivity. Therefore his taste remained in him, and his scent is not changed. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will send unto him wanderers that shall cause him to wander, and shall empty his vessels and break their bottles.
Oracle against Moab. I don't remember offhand in the inscriptions what the Babylonians did to Moab, but according to this, they really must have destroyed a lot of it. By the time of Josephus, he there are no people that were known as Moabites. And Josephus explains that somewhere, I believe. I think he discusses that in relation to Moabites and Ammonites. But he mentions them as late as Antiquities chapter 13, which is in the Second Temple period.
What does it mean to be like a heath in the wilderness? Bond says, like a destitute man. So I don't know what that means.
Which verse is that, Joe? Verse 6.
It says, flee, save your lives, and be like a heath, the heath in the wilderness.
Naked, stripped, and destitute.
Oh, it means hide activated. In the wilderness.
But it also means a tree or bush. According to,
Yeah, doesn't it mean like a bush row in Ireland, English?
I don't know why. Yeah, full DB. I'm supposed to get full BBB and TWOT. And for some reason, it's giving me Strong's Bible Works. So I'm not happy about that right now.
Cursed be he that do the work of the Lord deceitfully is an interesting line.
Yeah, and cursed be he that keepeth back his sword from blood. So if someone doesn't want to participate in the battle of the Lord, he's cursed. Is that it? If someone's a coward.
Which verse is that? I'm sorry, I'm trying to resolve that problem with Brown Driver Briggs in my Bible Works. Cursed be he that does the work of Yahweh deceitfully, and cursed be he that keepeth back his sword from blood. And that's a curse because Yahweh wants the Babylonians, I mean, he's warning them to flee, but at the same time, he wants them to be destroyed. So he's giving them a warning that he wants them to be destroyed. So I think he's speaking about that army from the north, that those Babylonian armies that are coming down to destroy all these other countries, as well as the Moabites, that cursed be he that does the work of the Lord deceitfully. In other words, doesn't kill everybody. And cursed be he that keepeth back his sword from blood. He's talking about these Babylonian armies that he wants them to kill everybody they can. That's how I read that.
Do you think you could extend that to Israelites who are like cowards and say, oh, I don't want to participate in the war, it's mean, or something like that? I mean, that's his attitude to people who don't want to do, you know, his work or, you know, participate in his wars.
Yeah, I'm going to discuss that at some level on my next Revelation podcast, because it talks about cowards being excluded.
Nice.
It just kind of makes me think of the modern day preachers and that stand up at their pulpit on Sundays and Wednesday nights, and they gas on about the things that they're doing for Yahweh or that they're doing for God and they're doing for Jesus.
Right.
And they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
They don't even know the truth.
Microphone
muted. They're gassing about it.
Yeah, the cowards can be associated, I think, with those who are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold that will be spewing out of his mouth.
Also, like, what about those who teach, like, hippie Jesus, like, love for everybody, don't hate, just love, man. You know, they're
kind of
like...
They think they're doing the work of the Lord or Yahweh, but they're just preaching and teaching trash and lies.
Doing his work deceitfully, and they're keeping back their sword from blood, for their own, you know, to preserve, because they think that'll preserve their own lives, maybe. So they're like, oh, I'm not going to war. I'm not going to fight for Yahweh. And so they're just seeking their, oh, it's like Jesus said, like, he who tries to preserve his life shall lose it.
Right.
Microphone activated.
Well, he said, he who loves his life shall lose it.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly.
It's similar, though, yeah. probably means the same thing, yeah.
In that BDB, heath means naked, stripped, destitute is number one, and number two is a tree or bush, probably a juniper or cypress.
Yeah, I was looking at that too. The juniper comes up a lot in scripture.
Okay. Do we get fruit from a juniper or cypress?
Well, I think at one time we were talking about how that came up when they were worshiping trees. I mean, in passages that talk about them worshiping trees, and it's a juniper and how it looks like a Christmas tree. So I don't know if they're just using juniper generally for trees or if it's that specific tree, but it does ring kind of ring bells because we now have Christmas trees and that whole thing. It's like they brought back this whole worship of this stupid tree, you know.
Well, I understand where you're coming from there, but I don't think that applies in this passage.
No.
I think that it's talking about something stripped bare and naked that has no fruit. And I don't think we get fruit out of either junipers or cypress. There's nothing edible or good that comes out of them. They're just trees.
Not unless you're a deer or a moose. They like eating the needles, you know.
Okay. Wow, eating needles, really?
Well, I mean, the whatever the hell they're called, like the leaves, the needle leaves, you know.
And Moab shall be ashamed of Chemosh, as the house of Israel was ashamed of Bethel, their confidence. How say ye, we are mighty and strong men for the war? Moab is spoiled and gone up out of her cities, and his chosen young men are gone down to the slaughter, saith the king, whose name is Yahweh of hosts. The calamity of Moab is near to come, and his affliction hasteth fast. Sorry, I was in the wrong translation. All ye that are about him bemoan him, and all ye that know his name say, how is the strong staff broken and the beautiful rod? Thou daughter that thou dost inhabit Dibon, come down from thy glory and sit in thirst, for the spoiler of Moab shall come upon thee, and he shall destroy thy strongholds. O inhabitant of Aroer, stand by the way and espy, and ask him that fleeth and her that escapeth, and say, what is done? Moab is confounded, for it is broken down. Howl and cry, tell ye it in Arnon, that Moab is spoiled. And judgment is come upon the plain country, upon Holon, and upon Jahazar, and upon Mephath, and upon Dibon, and upon Nebo, and upon Beth Dil Blathaim, and upon Kirathaim, and upon Beth Gemel, and upon Beth Meon, and upon Kerioth, and upon Bozra, and upon all the cities of the land of Moab, far or near. The horn of Moab is cut off, and his arm is broken, saith Yahweh. Make ye him drunken, for he magnified himself against Yahweh. Moab also shall wallow in his vomit, and he shall be in derision. For was not Israel a derision, derision unto thee? Was he found among thieves? For since thou spakest of him, thou skippest for joy. O ye that dwell in Moab, leave the cities and dwell in the rock, and be like the dove that maketh her nest in the sides of the whore's mouth. We have heard the pride of Moab. He is exceeding proud, his loftiness and his arrogancy and his pride and the haughtiness of his heart. I know his wrath, saith Yahweh, but it shall not be so. His lies shall not so affect it. Therefore will I howl for Moab, and I will cry for all Moab. Mine heart shall mourn for the men of Kirharaz. I'll stop there for now.
Yeah, obviously, He's still warning the Moabites to run off into the wilderness and live there. I'm looking for the verse where you stopped.
Wow. 31.
How did I skip? I'm looking for Kir Heres and I can't find it. That it mentioned earlier in the section which you read, it mentioned Aroer and Arnon. Aroer was the northernmost city of Moab. It was on the southern bank of the Arnon River. If you remember when the children of Israel took Moab in the book of Judges, or perhaps in the time of Joshua, they only took the northern half of it, north of the river Arnon. And they left the southern half of it to the Moabites. So these are the Moabites in that southern half that this is dealing with.
In verse 31, it says, shall mourn for the men of Kiheres.
There were two Kerioths, one in Judah and one in Moab.
Is that where Judas was from?
He was probably from the Kerioth in Judah, but who knows? I don't know if the Kerioth in Moab existed by the time of the New Testament.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I kind of sort of doubt it. Therefore will I howl for Moab, and I will cry out for all Moab. Mine heart shall mourn for the men of Kir Heres. And there's several times in the prophets that there's bewailing on account of Moab and for Moabites. I mean, yeah, they're the children of Lot. That's the heritage of Lot, but they're bastards that we don't know who the daughters of Lot married, but they're excluded from the congregation in the law. So I don't know why there would be a howling for Moab at the same time, because Moabites and Ammonites are explicitly excluded from the congregation in Deuteronomy chapter 23. It's different in the Septuagint, though. Therefore, howl ye for Moab on all sides. Cry out against the shorn men in a gloomy place. But then it says, I will weep for thee. And wow. It shouldn't even say, I will weep for thee. It says that in Brenton's Septuagint. But the verb is an imperative, aorist, active, second person plural. You will weep for thee. Or y'all, because it's second person plural. Or yous. It doesn't say, yeah, I will weep for thee. But that's the way Brenton translated it. But the verb form is second person. It's not first person. In the Septuagint, Yahweh is not saying that he would weep for Moab. The verb, on this account for Moab, I will cry out. I'm actually reading the Greek. It doesn't say I will cry out. It says you. It's a present active second person plural. You will cry out on all sides. And then both verbs mean to cry out or to cry aloud. So I would translate the second one as weep, just to show that they're two different verbs, right? Which is fine too. And it says basically wow. Weep for the men in a gloomy place or something like that. I mean, that's basically what Brenton has. But Kiratus, it might be a proper noun. It seems to be a place name. Weep for the men in gloomy Kiratus, which would be Kir Heres in the Masoretic text, right? But it's you will weep for the men in gloomy Kiratus. And then Brenton has, I will weep for thee, but that's not in the Greek. That's not in the Greek. There's three clauses, not two in his English. So I got to go see the next verse. Yeah, now in verse 32, the Greek does have a first person, I will weep. And Breton kind of translates it. No, he doesn't translate it like that. Breton's translation is weird. Oh, vine of Acerama. Where the Greek has, what the hell? No, I don't like Brenton's translation here at all. As the weeping of Jazer, I shall weep. It's plural. No, it's singular. It's future, I meant to say. It's a future, middle, first person singular. So that's an I shall weep for you. The vine of Sabema. So it does say, I shall weep for you and as the weeping of Jazer, I shall weep for you. And Breton took those five words and stuck them at the end of the previous verse of verse 31. So that's confusing when that happens, but it's not the first time. There's a lot of instances like that. So in verse 32, it does say, I shall weep, but Brenton stuck it at the end of verse 31.
So it's not for Moab then. It's for Sibma.
It's kind of, I would really want to sit and translate the whole thing from scratch because I don't like Brenton's translation of the passage. He has, O vine of Acerama, and I don't even see a word there for Acerama. I'll put the... I actually got to do... Wow. I got to take that there. And put it there. That's what Brenton has in his English. Here, Harris is only mentioned in this chapter of Jeremiah. That's another aside. It's one of the two chief strongholds of Moab, according to Strong's, I guess. So this is as the weeping of Jasher, I shall weep for you. And that's that section that you see, I will weep for thee before the 32, right? And then it says vine of Sabema. And that's where the, okay. That's where the King James Version has O vine of Sibma. O vine of Sibma, your branches pass through the sea. Your branches probably have reached the Sea of Jazer. And that's what Brenton has. That's what actually Brenton has cities of Jazer, but it's Sea of Jazer. It's Thalassa. It's not cities. That's crazy. I don't understand Brenton's translation at all. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can see why. touched but then upon. You would probably go with the Septuagint because you can't see why Yahweh would cry for Noah.
Well, right. And I would want to be real careful with the Septuagint translation. I would want to translate it very carefully, but because this is what you get, Joe. Well, when you're translating a book and you start from the beginning of the book, you get a feel for the Greek construction of the person that wrote it or the person that translated it from Hebrew, right? So you get a better feel for their construction and you could translate more accurately. If you look at my commentary on the Wisdom of Solomon, I had retranslated a lot of passages within the context that the King James Version had, right? But then when I did my translation of the Wisdom of Solomon, a lot of those passages I changed because I had a better feel for the overall context and for the way that it was constructed. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I started from the beginning and went through all the Greek, right? I still got two chapters left. This road trip kind of interfered with me completing them, but I'll do that as soon as I feel better. Maybe next week, I hope.
Yeah, well, you're pretty much done. Very close.
Yeah, I said you're close. Yeah. I'm close.
So it won't take long.
No, it should be just one more day, probably.
Oh, well, I'm going to continue with 32. O vine of Sibmah, I will weep for thee with the weeping of Jazer. Thy plants are gone over the sea. They reach even to the sea of Jazer. The spoiler is fallen upon thy summer fruit and upon thy vintage. And joy and gladness is taken from the plentiful field and from the land of Moab. And I have caused wine to fail from the wine presses. None shall tread with shouting. Their shouting shall be no shouting. From the cry of Heshbon, even unto Eliah, and even unto Jahaz, have they uttered their voice from Zoar, even unto Horanaim, as a heifer of 3 years old, for the waters also of Nimrim shall be desolate. Moreover, I will cause to cease in Moab, saith Yahweh, him that offereth in the high places and him that burneth incense to his gods. Therefore, mine heart shall sound for Moab like pipes, and mine heart shall sound like pipes for the men of Keherez, because the riches that he hath gotten are perished. For every head shall be bald and every beard clipped, upon all the hands shall be cuttings, and upon the loins sackcloth. There shall be lamentations generally upon the housetops of Moab and in the streets thereof, for I have broken Moab like a vessel wherein is no pleasure, saith Yahweh. They shall howl, saying, how is it broken down? How hath Moab turned the back with shame? So shall Moab be a dismaying to all them about him. For thus saith Yahweh, behold, he shall fly as an eagle and shall spread his wings over Moab. Kerioth is taken and the strongholds are surprised. And the mighty men's hearts in Moab at that day shall be as the heart of a woman in her pangs. And Moab shall be destroyed from being a people because he hath magnified himself against Yahweh. Fear and the pit and the snare shall be upon thee, O inhabitant of Moab, saith Yahweh. He that fleeth from the fear shall fall into the pit, and he that getteth up from out of the pit shall be taken in the snare. For I will bring upon it, even upon Moab, the year of visitation, saith Yahweh. They that fled stood under the shadow of Heshbon because of the force. But a fire shall come forth out of Heshbon, and a flame from the midst of Sihon, and shall devour the corner of Moab, and the crown of the head of the tumultuous ones. Woe be unto thee, O Moab! The people of Chemosh perisheth, For thy sons are taken captives, and thy daughters captives. Yet will I bring upon again the captivity of Moab in the later days, saith Yahweh. Thus far is the judgment of Moab.
Well, like I said, we don't know who Moab married. I mean, it's very possible they married, intermarried with other Adamic peoples in the area, because you had the Havilah and Midian and the Joktanites and those tribes in and around Moab on the east in what we would know as Arabia today, right? Or what became known in Solomon's time as Arabia, I should say. That's where the word first appears, is in the time of Solomon. But at the same time, Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 3, an Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh, even to their 10th generation shall they not enter into the congregation of Yahweh forever. And they were the two sons of Lot. So maybe in spite of that, Yahweh is expressing how he doesn't like to see the that the heritage of Lot be destroyed. I don't know, because Lot was a just man.
But aren't there a lot of Israelites living in Moab and these other places that are being spoken about in this chapter?
There were Israelites living in Moab, but here it all this context seems to be talking about Moabites, because these are all the cities of what was historically Moab. And they were still there in later times. They were still there in the 5th century and possibly even later.
Israel possessed some of Moab, but not all of Moab, right?
Right. Moab was subject to Israel in the time of David, but they were still their own people and nation south of the river Arnon. And here we have all these cities are south of the river Arnon. So it's not the portion that Israel took over and fully inhabited, but there must have been Israelites in Moab. But here, this really seems to be where it says the people of Chemosh perisheth, that the people of Chemosh can only be the Moabites.
But also, there were some Israelites there, like in the time of Ruth and before David and...
Well, right, but I don't believe that Ruth was an inhabitant of Moab below the river Arnon.
Yeah. And at verse 47, it says, yet I will bring again the captivity of Moab in the later days. That means that Yahweh will reverse the captivity of Moab in the later days. So he's going to bring them out of captivity in the later days. That's what that means, doesn't it?
To return or turn back, yes.
In the NLT, which is like a really basic version, it says, but I will restore the fortunes of Moab in the days to come.
Yeah, that later days just means future. It could have happened in 100 years later or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't mean the end of time.
It just seems strange that Yahweh would restore the fortunes of Moab at all.
Well, like I said, Lot was a just man, and it seems that Yahweh wanted to preserve Lot's inheritance for him. But the Moabites are all bastards now. I mean, there aren't really any Moabites.
Well, who would his daughters have mated with? Like the descendants of his daughters.
Yeah, right. That's what I just said. There were a lot of... Yeah, you know, Lot must have known that the Canaanites were cursed. He must have. He must have passed that on. So perhaps there were legitimate Moabites, but who can say? I can't say. Why were they excluded in Deuteronomy if they were legitimate? Just because they were children of incest? I mean, that's possible, but at that rate, basically Adam had sex with himself to have Seth.
Yeah, I don't think it was that, because I always thought that like his grandchildren would have ended up race mixing because there was no one else around that was Adamic in the area where they were.
Yeah, but that's not true because there were other Adamites around. There were the people of Midian and the people of Joktan and the people of Peleg and the people of Aphelah were all in the immediate area around them.
Okay, I guess I screwed that up. I just thought that maybe like here and even the next chapter, like Ammonites, he's specifically referring to the Israelites in those areas. But of course, they're using that term as a nationality as opposed to their racial or ethnic composition. I don't know. I guess throwing that out there, I don't know if that's right.
Man, I wish I could remember that passage in Josephus. He mentions Ammonites as late as Antiquities chapter 8. Book 8, maybe a little later. Yeah, book 10, book 12. Book 12 is during the time of the Maccabees. Before Herod. Middle of the 2nd century BC. And he mentions Ammonites then. So that I would put these fulfillments in the post-Babylonian period that these people were brought again from captivity, perhaps in the Persian period, because the clemency and the leave that the Judahites got to return back to Judah from the time of Cyrus, that must have been extended to all of the people that were captives of the Babylonians, not just to Judah. Cyrus's declaration wasn't specific to Judah. It was a general declaration for all of the tribes that were captive to the Babylonians that were relocated had to leave to go back to their original homelands in the time of Cyrus. And that's when I would say that these returns from captivity on the part of the Ammonites and the Moabites had happened is in the time of Cyrus. That's my opinion. And it could probably be established historically, I'm sure, without much trouble. I'll be right back. I gotta get my tea.
Well, maybe I should read 49 then. Yeah, what do you reckon, David?
Well, you might want to wait so he could hear it.
Judeo-Christians look at the Bible like every mention of the later days is the time of the end when Jesus returns, and that's simply not true. It's you have to interpret it historically.
Yeah, I know that because the promise to the sons, you know, was actually fulfilled in the later kingdom of Israel. You know how right. They all had a foot? Yeah. And that was the later day. So it was just the future.
Yes. And that's what, I mean, I've written on that a few times. That's what the word means, that word later days.
Still, I mean, Yahweh's definitely been nice to the Moabites.
Well, like I said, that's the inheritance of Lot. I don't know how much to interpret that. How else to interpret that is that Yahweh wanted to preserve Lot's inheritance until they extinguished themselves. But at the same time, he didn't want them in the congregations of Israel.
Actually, that might make sense because he never actually destroyed any nation, any other Adamic nation on his own. He allowed them to extinguish themselves over time.
Yeah, it's like all nations around about thee will be destroyed, but I will not make a full end of thee. That was just a few chapters ago. I mean, that was referring to Adamic nations, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like Egypt was destroyed, Assyria, Babylon, they're all destroyed.
Yeah, and when he gave them up for a ransom, which is in his Isaiah. Like he doesn't do it. It's just that he knows they're going to do it anyhow.
Oh, yeah, he gave Egypt as a ransom for thee, for Israel. And Egypt was mostly Adamic.
Yeah, and Sheba and, all of them, right? I mean, but in that specific one, he mentioned Sheba as well. And I think Ethiopia, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, something to think about.
The first place that word Akarith appears is Genesis 49:1, that I might tell you that which shall befall you in the last days, and it should just say future as we speak.
Microphone muted.
Because all those things had happened to them throughout their history.
Yeah, because when they say last, we think, oh, the great day of Yahweh, when it's not.
Yeah, it's not. And that's the way Judeo-Christians think that happens after the 7 years tribulation, right?
Yeah. You want to do chapter 49, Bill?
Oh, yeah, that was only 39 verses. Make up for some of those 5-verse chapters. Nah, not really. We could wait. We could wait. I think yes. 5 chapters is enough. 4 chapters?
Yeah.
Even though 2 of them together, we really did 3 chapters. I mean, that's fine, though.
I think we did all right.